What's up, witches, and welcome to Witch Space. I'm Gemini.
And I'm Scorpio. And today, we are talking about the book, Orishas, Goddesses, and Voodoo Queens, The Divine Feminine in the African Religious Traditions, a book that came out in 2020 by Lilith Dorsey. A little bit about Lilith. She actually hails from many different magical traditions, including Celtic, Afro-Caribbean, and Native American. Her traditional education came from plant science, and her website is lilithdorsey.com. So if you like what you hear here, and this is not the only book that she has. She has a bunch of books. So if you like this podcast and you want to check her out, check her out.
I love when somebody comes in with plant science. Like, hey, chemistry buddy. Hi, bioorganic chem. I love you. My actual favorite. There's nothing really. That's not really the point of this book. I just wanted to say that I like it.
So this book, another new one.
Yeah.
But we're going to be going back in time, way back in time with the next one.
We are. I think we did a great job season one of laying a foundation, but it has been so fun to read new books. I love getting to read new books, and it makes it better than to be like, oh, well, we're going to go back and look at a book that we're like excited about, not like, oh, we have to talk about Gardner because this is how, like, yeah, we have to talk about Gardner, but like, no, I'm so much more excited about the older books now that we've been in new books.
Agreed. Absolutely. So I guess I'll jump right into the quote, which comes from the intro. It's a pretty long quote. So here we go. One of the most important things about the religions that honor the Orishas and the Loas is their focus on women and women's empowerment in traditional and time-honored ways. The Orishas and the Loas are cosmic forces in the universe, sometimes personified, sometimes thought of as deities, but always divine. And I love that. I think, you know, I've noticed we also have a theme this year. We are kind of leaning into women, right? Yeah. I don't think it's a shock or a surprise with everything that's going on in the world right now, whether it comes to women, non-binary people, cis and trans women. It just seems like anybody who is not fitting a mold, who doesn't identify as cis male,
yeah,
and doesn't fit a mold is under attack. And I think for us, this is kind of our way of like leaning into something positive. So, yeah. I also want to point something else out. So this book can be purchased by anybody. And I think, I mean, do we really spend our time talking about books we don't like? No. So obviously, we loved it. I loved this. This is not a book that I am going to donate to the Lending Library. This is mine forever. Maybe not forever, but for a while. And that being said, we're talking about closed practices. If you're going to start working with the Orishas, the Loas, you have to get initiated. If you're going to follow a voodoo tradition, you have to find somebody to initiate you. So again, great book to read. And you might go, you know what? I have been called to this. And now that I'm hearing this podcast, this is my sign that I need to find a godmother, godfather, somebody to initiate me into this. Mm-hmm. So please keep that in mind. Now in the book, they do say that you can start with an altar before you actually proceed. And I'm going to say, yes, I totally think that's a good thing to start building a relationship. But keep in mind that what you are doing is taking the car out for a test drive. You mm-hmm. don't own the car. Car doesn't belong to you. You can't take it home. You still have to go to the dealership and sign the paperwork and take home the car. Same thing with this. If you have an altar to somebody, you are working with this, you are meditating, you are trying to do all the rites possible so that you can go, yep, I'm ready. Now I have to go get initiated and follow the proper steps. So we may sound like broken records, but just in case there's somebody who hasn't heard us say this, we just want to say, you know, be respectful, go through the proper steps. Nobody's gatekeeping. We're just saying, if you really want to do this the right way.
We're gatekeeping a little bit. Gatekeeping is not inherently bad. It is important to have boundaries on things. And if you are upset about the fact, I want to dive right into this because I am a white woman, right? And I had a lot of difficulty energetically with this book because it's so obviously not for me. And it's so important, especially for like the white ladies listening, that you come at this with a lot of respect. And it's right in the introduction where she talks about the history of slavery that is tied intrinsically in these faiths. Gatekeeping is good here. Gatekeeping is okay. It is important that things have boundaries. And if you are upset that a boundary has been put in place, you need to interrogate that. Why are you upset? Are you upset because you feel truly, genuinely called? Right? Okay, you can, there's a way to do it. If you feel truly, genuinely called, I'm sorry that it's hard, but you can do it. If you just want to access something, good that it's being gatekeeped. Good that someone has a boundary, a gate up to say, well, no, you don't get to just come in and take this. And that's not even to talk about, she also mentions in the book that, like, because these faiths have been secret, sometimes there are bad people who have taken advantage of that. So not only are you being gatekept because maybe you don't need to be participating, you're also being gatekept because someone's protecting you. Someone's looking out for you and saying, hey, be safe, be careful, go slow, follow the boundaries because they're there for your protection.
I guess when I say that no one's gatekeeping, what I'm trying to say is if you feel called to this, you're not being shut out.
Yeah.
Right? If you truly are coming to this, I think I've said this on the podcast, but I'll say it again. You know, I had somebody reach out to me, like a friend of a friend, like I kind of know them, but I really don't. And they wanted a spell for something. And they were like, you know, because I'm so tired of all these white spells. They're white, by the way, the person who said this.
Oh, yes.
And so I wrote back, it was a text. I was like, what's wrong with white spells? They work. And I've never heard from that person again. So obviously, they realize what they said. They don't know how to come back from it. Okay.
Yeah.
And anybody listening should know that I am very accepting and I don't hold grudges and I won't hold that against you.
She said that out loud. You all heard it. It's a true statement and it's not a lie.
And then the cackle came out. Of course I'm judging you. Why would you make such a statement? Why? Putting people down doesn't raise other people up. So putting down a white spell is not going to make you look good in my eyes. Like, what?
I also feel really weird about that because, like, why are you a white, I'm assuming a white woman, reaching out to a Hispanic woman so that you can have her magic because you think her magic works better?
No, because they've colonized everything else. Now
like, come on, dude.
I don't know.
This is why boundaries are good.
Right. And I wasn't going to give her a spell because that's just ridiculous.
You should have texted me. I could have written a white spell and you could have pretended it was yours. You could have colonized.
You would have written something to backfire on her and you know it. Yeah.
No. No. Yeah. I would never. I'm such a nice person and I never do mean things ever. And that I said out loud and it's true.
Oh my God. All right. Into the book.
Oh, actually, I would love to ask you a question.
Okay.
One of the things that she talks about in the introduction is syncretism, mm-hmm. which I want to say syncretism every time, but it's syncretism, and how syncretism was necessary in the creation of these faiths because, one, people had to be secret about it. Christianity was the only thing that you were, like, allowed to practice, and so you had to take these African traditional religions and kind of couch them in Christian practice, and we see this throughout the book of the way people deal with that and whether or not it's okay. And I know you've talked before about not wanting to participate in the colonizer's religion. And I guess I wanted to know what your thoughts were on this topic of syncretism in African traditional religion.
You know, I've heard a lot of different things. I've heard that, yes, they had to hide their religion in the colonizer's religion. I've also been told that the Orishas come back again and again and again. And what people actually did, what people that were enslaved did, was that they were like, oh, no, no, no. This is this person come back in this way. So I've heard it, you know, I've heard a bunch of different things when it comes to this. Can you separate a Reese's peanut butter cup now? Right? Now that you've put this together.
Yeah.
Once it's together, you can like maybe chew off the chocolate around the peanut butter, but you can't really separate them. I don't think it's wrong just because I feel this way. I don't look down on people who did. It was survival, right? I wasn't there, or I might have been there, right? Reincarnation. I don't know where I was, but I wasn't there. So however this is, it is. Now, we were talking about what to do and finding a godparent. And she lists here the recommendations. She says, the first thing you should do is study the various practices and see what calls to you. Then you should go to a temple or establishment and respectfully find out what you can. For example, are they homophobic?
Yeah, right? That's something you should probably check.
Now, that doesn't mean the whole tradition is. That could just be that particular branch. So you shouldn't leave defeated somewhere going, oh, great. Mm-hmm. I thought, no, check it out. Maybe it is the entire tradition. You have to find out, right? Then discuss and find out the godparents, people you've chosen, their spiritual lineage, and find out who they are as a person. Like you said, there are a lot of bad people out there. So find out, talk to their godchildren.
And you know what? I really love that this is like baked into the conversation from the jump, because there are lots of bad people in paganism in general, in New Age religion in general. And I feel like it's very easy for people to get taken advantage of.
Yeah.
But it's not as much like, it's like an open secret in like Wicca or in other New Age religions. Whereas like, I love that she's right here being like, no, you should really check these people out. You should really make sure that you align with them, because we've heard stories from people we know of like, yeah, I had this mentor and I thought they were good, but they actually treated me like shit. And it's like, hey, that doesn't help you. That doesn't make your spirituality better, whether you are Wiccan or practicing another religion.
Look, we've had people on the podcast that you've never heard us mention again because we found out stuff about them. We're like, well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Cut that out. Also find out what's going to be required of you
if
you initiate with them. In other words, you know, is there going to be an animal sacrifice involved here? Do you have to pay a large sums of money? Like, find out. It's really important because once you've joined a house, it's really difficult to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like when you're born, you can decide never to speak to your parents again. Guess what? They're still your parents. That's still your house. So, you know, you have a choice here. Make a good one. And then I like the last question. Ask yourself, are you really all in?
Yeah.
You know, why do you want to do this? I knew people who were like, oh, you know, I really want to learn New Orleans voodoo. And I'm like, oh, do you have family from New Orleans? No. Well, do you have connections? Did you live in New Orleans? No. So what's your connection to New Orleans voodoo versus other voodoo? Like, I don't understand. Like, what, you know, so, and maybe you can't explain it. Maybe you're just like, I don't know. And that's fine. But I'm just saying, you really need to question, why is this the thing you want to go after?
And also, it's okay to be interested in things and not do those things, right? Like, you can be passionate about something. You could be like, I think New Orleans voodoo is so cool, and I know all about the different places in New Orleans, and I can tell you, like, you know, uninitiated stuff. But if you're not really called because it's like a religious thing, a faith thing, a spiritual thing, just be the guy who knows a lot about New Orleans voodoo.
Yeah.
That's allowed.
Yeah. But, and she does mention a Yoruba proverb, you can't get owl from a book, which is spiritual knowledge. You're not going to get that from a book. And I really like that she put that in there. So you can learn, like you said, a lot about a lot of things, but you're not going to be blank, whatever it is that you want to be, unless you do this. So where should we start? She talks about ancestor altars. She says that's a really good way to start, as is connecting with tarot and oracle decks. And she actually recommends four decks that she thinks are really good. And one of them is the New Orleans Voodoo Tarot. That's really good for connecting. Again, so we're talking about feminine energy here. I mean, we're talking about the practice in general, but she really is talking about feminine energy. And she has the difference between altars and shrines. She talks about this. It's a good place to worship, pray, leave offerings, but an altar is a temporary space, where a shrine is more of a permanent setup, which I think is interesting because, okay, so I have what I always called my altar in my home. Mm-hmm. When I think about it, it's really a shrine because it doesn't come down ever.
Yeah. It's, and this is where we have like the differing definitions throughout What? So, sorry, tangent. What do we even call this? Right? Like, I used to refer to it as like the neo-pagan umbrella, but like, I would feel kind of disrespectful referring to like Afro-Caribbean religions as paganism. Right? Like, I don't think that voodoo or Santeria or anything like that, I don't think that's pagan necessarily.
So, what is the meaning of the word pagan?
Right. Well, historically, sorry, I'm gonna do like my little nerd shit. Paganus from the Latin means farmer. So it's actually like an insult. It was originally an insult labeled on people who were non-Christians who were still practicing like what would be Religio Romana today. And I guess was sort of reclaimed by the movement to refer to non-major religions.
So if we're going under that definition, then this is a pagan religion. If it's a non-traditional, but non-traditional to who?
Right.
Because if we're looking at some of these traditions, they are traditional. So it's not pagan. So I think it depends on how you wanna. I'm gonna say, I would ask somebody who's actually practicing, do you see yourself as a pagan?
Hey guys, if you practice any of the traditional African religions, can you let me know if you consider yourself a pagan or not? Just, shoot us a message.
Yeah.
Because I know that Lilith's other book is voodoo and Afro-Caribbean paganism. So some
Right.
people probably do, but I would like to be correct. So if more people could message us.
I don't think we're going to get a correct answer. I think we're going to get answers
Yeah.
based on who the person is, where they grew up,
Yeah.
how they saw the religion to begin with. So I think maybe I'm going to say maybe an American or a person in the US mainland might see it as paganism. And I mean, I can tell you right now, my grandmother and my great grandmother would not have called themselves pagans, witches. They
Right.
were Catholics. You know, I call them out of town Catholics because it's like
That's
the
funny.
shit they did was like, okay.
So the reason that happened in my brain is because in my sort of study of paganism, a shrine is non-working. So an altar, whether it's permanent or not, from my studies, would be something you are working at.
All right, then I have a combo.
But in
Yeah.
this
No.
book, they're
Yeah.
different. So it's
Right.
always going to depend on your path. And that stresses me out because I like having right answers, but everybody's lives are individual and you have to do what works for you.
But I think that's part of the beauty about some of this stuff is that,
Yeah.
you know, we're so worried about getting everything right. What is right?
Stop it. Stop it.
Okay, so that was a bit of an intro of the book we were just talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then she's going to go into the different goddesses and at the end, voodoo queens. So we start with Oshun, and she has different pronunciations, but this is the Cuban pronunciation. And she is the patron saint of Cuba, also known as La Caridad del Cobre. Okay.
I'm so happy you said that because I was reading it and I was like, ah, this is going to sound really good when Scorpio says it. It sounds so stupid in my head. I speak like a gringa, but you sound so cool. I need to learn Spanish so bad.
I think it's really funny that the last episode I was talking about being the last whatever we're talking about Espiritismo.
Yes.
And I was talking about some Puerto Rican. And then in this episode, I get to go. So I'm Cuban, and people are probably like, she's insane. And here's something. If you are of, I'm not biracial, but I'm mixed culturally, ethnically. So not even ethnically, whatever. So, you know, people are like, do you feel like more Puerto Rican or do you feel more Cuban? And I'm like, I don't know what it's like to be one without the other. I am 100 Boricua a pura cepa, which means I am 100% Puerto Rican. Okay. But if I'm with my mother's family, I'm 100% Cuban. Like, there's just, I don't believe in being half anything. So you're going to hear me like on the podcast say, I'm Cuban, I'm Puerto Rican. You'll be like, okay, she's, you know, she's weird. But that's where it
She's
comes from.
also Japanese.
And apparently, some people think I'm Japanese.
She's not.
Not at all. I even did a genetic thing just to see if there was a little
Double
bit in
check.
there. Nothing. Zip. I didn't think it would be in there, but I'm like, what is going on? Anyway, Oshun, she represents beauty, love, money, fertility, gold, and in a generalized sense, all women are seen as her daughters, either, you know, like through direct lineage or by being the divine mother, which to me kind of brings me back to the Morrigan.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a mother. We talked about that, right? She's not a mother figure, but as a queen, she is mother to her nation. So Oshun is kind of like that in that respect as well. There's stories about her. So one of the things that I like is that she's got these tales inside of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how Oshun controlled the witches at one point because she was very powerful. She is the sacred energy of the river, the Ashe. She's got many faces. One of them is that she is a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that she's seen with is a fan. And the fan is meant, right, you can't go into battle and be all hot-headed, to kind of cool your head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was reading this book, something had upset me at work. The adults. Only the adults.
Always the adults, never the children. The
children are fantastic. The adults stink. So I was upset about something, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to read about the for the podcast and just forget about it. And the minute that I opened up and I saw Oshun, I was like, oh, this is going to be nice. And by the time I got to the part about fan cooling the head, I was like, she's doing this throughout the whole chapter with me.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like I was home. She's also the Odisha of dance. Her sacred animals are the peacock. Well, in La Regla Lusimi is peacock. In Nigeria, it's the crocodile, vulture, and hippo. So it depends. So when we're talking about these goddesses, we have to realize something. One, they come from Africa. Two, they were enslaved people from Africa. And now we have another version by the time we get to the Caribbean. So from whatever country in Africa to Cuba, right, it's going to change. Just like Spanish is different, whether you speak it in Spain or you speak it somewhere in Latin America, or English is different from British English. It's the same thing. So religion is going to take shape. So one of the nice things about this book is that she does do that. She does give you the difference between, okay, this is practice here, this is practice mm-hmm. there, you know, just so that you know.
One of the things that I love about this book, especially if you are a person who can use these, each chapter gives you so many different tools for relating to each of these feminine energies. There are like recipes if you're a kitchen witch, there's a ritual bath, there are oils, there's all of these different options available to you that really make it so clear that these Orishas, Loas, goddesses, voodoo queens, etc., they're all accessible in a variety of ways. It's not just you have to do one thing or another.
Yeah. So I found out there's a sacred garden, she writes about this, for Oshun at the Brushwood Folklore Center in Sherman, New York. I have no idea where Sherman, New York is, but I want to go.
Hold on, let me type it into the Google Maps.
And see where it is.
I'm assuming it's upstate.
Yeah.
Well, okay, lots of things are upstate in comparison to us, so that doesn't really mean anything. It's 5 hours and 47 minutes away. It is Western New York.
So if I drive like another hour, am I in Canada?
You're actually closer to Pennsylvania. Yes, you could make it to Canada, but you're probably like 2 hours away from Buffalo.
Oh, okay. So closer to Pennsylvania. All right. Well, yeah. I'm not going.
I mean, I'm just, you know, you could fly into Buffalo and then it's like a shorter trip. Buffalo has the sketchiest little airport.
Really?
Yeah. I used to pick up Mr. Gemini or drop off Mr. Gemini. I used to drop off Mr. Gemini because we went to college near Rochester. So he would just fly in, and it's just so little in comparison to like all of the end of New York airports, like LaGuardia and everybody. She's cute. She's not like Stewart, who is the tiniest airport in the world, mm-hmm. metaphorically, but she's a rinky dink. I'm so sorry, Buffalo.
Yeah, not going there. Anyway, so then we get to Yemaya, which is basically, she is a mother. And mm-hmm. we're talking about a mother goddess. You want a mother goddess, she is it. Kindness, blessing, also known as Diosa del Mar. So one thing that I learned when I was a kid was, if you're going into the water, right? Especially new water you've never been to. You may want to call Yemaya, put some sugar around your ankles. You walk in sideways like a crab. You don't go frontwards, right? It's not an affront. You are asking for permission to go into these waters to, you know, have her blessing. So, yeah.
That's cool. I really want to talk more. I almost want more of this episode to be about, like, what did you learn from your grandmother and your family? Like, what's your relationship to all of this? Because a lot of this book is very much like, here is an entity. Here is the stories about that entity. Here's how you work with that entity. Here, lots of facts. And it's very cool. And I suggest we, like, our listeners read it. The stories are fantastic. The energy is lovely. But, like, how did you learn about these things? Like, which of these did you already know about?
I knew about both of these. I mean, there's others in the book, but I'm saying this is as far as far. So yeah, I did know about both of them. Mostly because there's certain saints that are in everybody's home. Mm-hmm. And La Caridad del Cobre is something that every Cuban is going to have just because they're going to have it. The when it comes to Yemaya, she's the patron saint, but of the Bay of Havana specifically. So people say, oh, she's a patron saint of Cuba. No, she's a patron saint of a part of Cuba, the part of Cuba that supposedly everybody comes from, which I find annoying. Ask a Cuban, where are you from? Havana. Really? So the rest of the island is just desolate? There's nobody anywhere else? Y'all just come from Havana? All right.
Maybe it's like when people ask, like, oh, where are you from? And we're like, New York City, because otherwise you have to explain where we're actually from and nobody knows where that is.
Okay, but I would just say I'm from Cuba. I don't think that I would say I'm from Havana. Like, I'm from New York. I literally was born in New York City, so I would say I'm
you
from
can,
New York
yeah,
City.
You can say that.
But when you're talking to another Cuban, that's what I find annoying. And I've I've registered disgust every time I hear it, because I think the last person I actually said, wow, so the rest of the island is completely uninhabited. And they just stared at me. You can't all be from Havana. I just don't believe this at this point. You know, whatever. That's another pet peeve of mine. No, we're not from Havana. My family's from Matanzas. There you go. Okay.
I was going to ask. So that's great.
Yeah, there's one Cuban who's going to say the truth. What else can we say about Yemaya? So some traditions, they'll say that Oshun is the daughter of Yemaya. Some traditions say Yemaya and Oshun are sisters. Mm-hmm. So again, just like mythology of any goddesses, you're going to have this, who are they married to, yes, right? The one thing you have to realize when it comes to the Orishas is that if you have a relationship with some, that kind of means you're not messing with some others, okay?
Right.
You can follow Yemaya and follow Oshun and have relationships with both. They kind of are like the same. They're all one pantheon, but they're part of like the same crew.
Right.
So, you know, it's funny, speaking of my family. So I asked my mom, I said, you know, how come when it comes to goddesses, when we think of goddesses, we think of, you know, Ceridwen, or we think of the Morrigan, or we think of Danu or Bridget. I said, and how come when it comes to Oshun and Yemaya, they're like vilified? And she's like, oh, come on, that's easy. It's because they're black. It's racism. And I was like, okay, Ma. It was just, I thought I was going to have more.
She's not wrong.
She's not wrong. But I just thought it was funny the way she was just like, oh, come on. And then that was the end of the conversation. I thought we'd have like more of a nuanced conversation about what's going on. She was just like, no, that's it. What more do you need to know? I was like, all right.
And I think Lilith does a really good job of not doing that, because I don't think there's any part in this book where you're like, oh, these are terrible entities. These goddesses are awful. Like, no, she tells their stories and they're very interesting. And they, you know, you don't write Oshun, the river of beauty and love, and Yemaya, the ocean of motherly love, and then be like, they're terrible. They're evil.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. So there's that. Then we have the next chapter, which is Oya, the power of the wind.
Who you don't talk to if you're talking to Oshun and Yemaya.
Right. So this is where, because I knew we were going to the next chapter. Yep. I'm like, yeah, now we're going to go to people that you don't talk to, which, you know, I think is interesting. They say that her sacred life force, her Ashe, is actually in the Niger River.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. She has the power to travel between spaces and worlds, between the living and the dead. And I love that.
Yeah.
But there are other Orishas that do that you can do, but they're male,
mm-hmm.
In connection with Oshun and Yamaya if you wanted to do that. I don't know if there's anything else. She's one of the wives of Shango. And Chango was, I named my little dog after Chango, after particularly him, his full warrior name, which is Kabyosile Chango, which is the King Chango. So that was my dog's full name that I had written on his
I'm obsessed with that. So then did you ever see, how do I say her name right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you ever see like her growing up, reverence to her growing up, or was it very much because Cuba is so Oshun and Yamaya that she was just like not really present?
I don't know if she was present. She was never, I never saw her in my grandmother's home. And how I found out who any of these people were is, although Chango was in my grandparents' home, grandparents, it was my grandmother and my great-grandmother living together when I was a kid. And they had statues and they were these beautiful, I just saw them as beautiful African women. I didn't think they were, you know, anything. And my great-grandmother would leave treats or money or something. And she would say, like, she would say, this is so-and-so. And I didn't know they were talking about deity. I was just like, oh, she named her doll. Like, you know, one of my, I named my dolls. So if you have a statue, and there was one in particular that to this day, I wish I had. She was absolutely breathtaking. But anyway, so they were like, this is Oshun. This is Chango. And then to see if I remembered, like I'd come to visit and they're like, I think Chango has something for you. And I would run to that statue or doll in my, what I used to think. And I'm like, ah, there's a dollar. Ah, there's a candy. And that was like part of their way when I was really little to like get me to know things without my mother knowing. Because whatever I know, my mother forbade them from teaching me anything. Mm-hmm. My mother has a weird relationship when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because she broke with Catholicism. So for her, she didn't want me involved in this, you know?
Yeah.
She also had me baptized because she knew these two crazies were going to take me and get me baptized. And
so
she
it was like I'm going to do it so they don't.
She said they're going to be running through the street and get hit by a car. Like, that's what my mother was thinking. She's like, mm-hmm. no, we're just going to. That's why I am almost a year old. I'm standing up at my baptism. Oh. Yeah. My baptism pictures look bizarre compared to other kids. So yeah, she didn't want me around this, which is interesting because I'm not saying I'm going in, but I might be going in. Anyway, the next
chapter. No, you can't say that and then not talk about it. Talk about it. What does that mean?
Okay, so I don't know where this path is going to take me, but I am being called to learn more.
Okay.
Many years ago, I visited a santero who had a lot of godchildren, actually, and was well known. And he said to me, he did a reading for me. And, you know, I have very few people read for me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, I want him to read for me. And at the end of the reading, he passed away, by the way. He was so sweet. And he said to me, I have to tell you something. He said, the Orishas love you. And they have told me, they have instructed me that if you want to do what I do and help people, you know, through them, mm-hmm. that I, the whole ceremony, Bajar el Santo, get me initiated, all that stuff, that costs a lot of money. He said, for free. And that the face that you're making is the face that I made. He goes, wow. Okay. He said, so you know what I'm saying. And I'm like, yeah, that was more of an order, not something out of the goodness of his heart, because he'd be losing thousands.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know. And he says, you don't have to know. He's not around anymore. Mm-hmm. So what is it that I want to be initiated in? I have to take the steps that she suggests. I have to see what works for me. I have to talk to people.
Yeah.
So I'm in a journey right now that is going to be very slow moving, that might take me my whole life to figure out. But, and I don't know. I don't know if it's, as you get older, you miss your family. I've said it on the podcast. Those women are always with me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, why can't I work with Oshun and work with the Morrigan? Like, what is, right? So all I'm saying is, I don't know. This is just, this book brought up a lot of past for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me question. That's why I asked my mom, because I was like, why are they vilified? When she said that, I'm like, this is absolutely ridiculous. Right? I don't know what I want to do. Because again, I'm not touching the colonizers' religion. I am not going near saints. So mm-hmm. I will have to see. But like I said, they've existed before the saints.
Right.
Okay. So that's what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in La Caridad del Cobre. Right? That is a saint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in her. So anyway, chapter 5 takes us to Nana Buruku, the wisdom of the ancients. She's got a bunch of other names too. And that's another thing that I think is interesting. And supposedly this is the most ancient energy in the Orisha pantheon. Worshipped in Nigeria, Ghana, Togo, even New Orleans. So some people say that she has no business being in modern worship. And other people say, well, she's here because she's needed.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I thought it was an interesting thing for her to bring up. And so she's seen as a mother or sometimes grandmother. Blessings of fertility and pregnancy, but honoring her is complex. So I think it's interesting that she writes about, you know, Orishas that are maybe not even ones that are commonly talked about. And then she also talks about more. She talks about the most ancient of deities, all the divine waters coming together. This person is not an Orisha, but is the seawater to Yemaya, right? Older than the Orishas, Mamiwata, the mother of wealth. And another thing that I like about her is that she says here in the book that part of her power comes from her connection to the enslaved Africans and then to the descendants of the enslaved Africans. So she is like this oldest, most powerful deity that just, and also she manifests as gender fluid. And that's something that I loved seeing in the book, because so many times, especially when it comes to Wicca, right? You have the gender binary. Well, guess what? The oldest things, right? When looking at older religions, I think that's something Gerald Gardner got wrong.
Yeah, right? I think if we're looking at
older stuff, we're looking at older stuff, we should be looking at the fact that gender was created by people. So at some point, people weren't worried about it. We cared about your gender. So
one of the things that she talks about in the Mamiwata chapter is about the voodoo spiritual temple and Priestess Miriam. And am I crazy, or did you meet Priestess Miriam?
Yeah, I did. I met Priestess Miriam years ago.
I vaguely remember you mentioning it.
Yeah, it was kind of funny when I was reading it. I'm like, oh, I met that lady. So really nice.
That moment really stood out for me, because sometimes when we read these books, they're very like far removed from real life or real practice. And so the idea that, like, yeah, Scorpio met Priestess Miriam, like that's a real person that really existed and that you can really meet, like that grounds, I think, the conversation. And it helps to then move into, when we talk about the voodoo queens, these are real people, right? You can go see Marie Laveau's grave. Like, those are real people that you can really relate to.
What surprised me about the book was that she said, people, you have to go as a guide. You have to be in a guided tour to see Marie Laveau's tomb. And that shocked me, because I've seen it. I just went, you know. You can read up on where it is, because, you know, these graveyards are on grids. So basically you just follow. And then, you know, and of course hers is marked, and there's tons of offerings. I mean, you can't miss it, because people have marked up her grave respectfully, not graffiti. So yeah, no, you could find it. It's just, I guess they don't allow people. God knows what they were doing or what they were trying to do. And, you know, and I'm going to blame TV. I'm going to blame American Horror Story, to be honest with you.
Well, and even when she's talking about that, she talks about how a tour guide saw them doing a ritual and like, was like, oh, well, this isn't really voodoo, because voodoo doesn't happen during the day. Like, how would you know?
And have you ever heard of a religion that is only practiced at certain times? There's certain rituals you might do at certain times of the day, but you don't stop being anything because it's daylight.
Giving racism. It's giving racism. Like, oh, voodoo doesn't happen during the day. It only happens at night in the dark when it's creepy. Like, oh, really? Maybe you should unpack that.
If you think about it, we have so many shows that deal with witches, with white witches. And some of them show witches in a bad light, like Sabrina and her father is Lucifer or whatever. But it's still not bad. She's still not a bad person. But somehow Hollywood still has this hold on voodoo that when you say voodoo, people are like, oh my God, that's horrible. It's like, do you know what it is? You know, American Horror Story, you know, when you malign white witches, it's not a big deal because there's good to outweigh the bad. American Horror Story brought Marie Laveau back, which I guess we should maybe start talking about since chapter 7 goes into a Haitian Loa that actually is a guardian or was a guardian of Marie Laveau. And we can talk about her importance. But they brought Marie Laveau back from the dead because obviously, you know, it was taking place in modern time. And she was just horrible. I mean, this never happened, but supposedly she gave, first of all, they confused everybody. They have one person, Papa Legba, who is not a devil, and they made him a devil, but they dressed him as Baron Samedi. And I'm like, what did they do in American Horror Story? Like, they had no consultants, and they probably didn't. They probably read whatever and decided to change whatever, because again, it's voodoo. So who cares if you mess with it? Who cares if you represent it in a good light? You know, they had Marie Laveau killing her child so that she could live forever. Stop it. Just, it really upset me. And again, I loved American Horror Story, but I remember seeing those going, what did they do to her? Why would you do that to her?
And like, we love Angela Bassett.
No, she's fantastic.
She's great.
Yeah.
The writing was, not right. And I don't even watch American Horror Story, and I heard about it.
Yeah. You know, did I think she portrayed her well? I think she portrayed her. I think if Marie Laveau was alive now, she would be Angela Bassett, you know? But, you know, Marie Laveau was a mother. And in fact, one of her children, she mentions it in the book, was also named Marie. And a lot of people are like, oh, which one was Marie? Did she live forever? No, it's like she had mother and daughter, and she passed on a lot of stuff to her daughter.
Let's hop back a little bit and talk about Urzuli, who is the sweet waterfall of passion and the storm of love.
So then we have chapter 7. This person or this deity is a Haitian Loa. So, you know, one of the things I like about this book is that it's not just one aspect or one part of the world, right? She's going around to different traditions, which is really cool. It's said that Marie Laveau claimed to have this magic mirror that belonged to this, like, or was attributed to this deity. So we don't know. It was one of her ritual tools, supposedly, to be able to see into the invisible and visible world. And I thought that was really cool. And it gave me Snow White vibes. I don't know why when I saw that, right?
Yes, 100%.
Who's the fairest? It was just kind of like, I'm looking into the future. I'm looking into the past. I thought that was really cool.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know too many stories where there is, like, the phrase magic mirror is so ubiquitous, but I couldn't name you another tale that besides Snow White that like has a magic mirror.
You're right, but I feel the same way. Like, we know there are.
Yeah, like I feel like they're everywhere, and yet the only one I can think of is Snow White.
Huh.
If you guys know any magic mirror tales, please message us. I want to know them.
You want to know all of them.
I want to know everything.
And then what do we talk about?
Well, speaking of wanting to know everything, one of the things you were really excited about, and one of the things that I think is so cool from this chapter, is talking about the veves. Is how we say that?
I think so.
I love the idea that, first of all, sometimes they're in cornmeal. So it's this, there's like an impermanence to it. It reminds me of like a Buddhist mandala that like the monks would do in the sand. And then like, it's supposed to be at some point wiped away. The vive for Urzuli is beautiful. It's like this big heart with lots of line work in the middle.
They've also been made with metal. I think it all depends on the ritual.
Yes.
And I really like that it's activated by sprinkling rum and Florida water as well as other items. And then it's meant to be danced on. And why are you smiling at me?
We need to have a conversation about Florida water.
Okay.
I need to chat about it real quick. Because here's the thing. Obviously, I love Florida water, right? In the sense that I like buying basically magic potions from witches that I love and support. But like, are we calling things Florida water that aren't really Florida water?
I have no idea. I will say this, and this might sound harsh, but I only buy. I mean, you can make Florida water, but I'm not that kind of person. I'm not going to make something. If somebody else makes it, I'm going to support you making it. I'm going to buy the same Florida water from the same company that has been sold and bought by my family forever. It is going to be, I'm going to support a Latino or an African or African American Florida water. That's just me. I don't know what everything else is. You know, there are the witch adjacent people who like to use a lot of our tools, and I don't know what they're doing and what they're making, and I'm not buying your Florida water. But I can't tell you it's not Florida water. I don't know.
For me, it sort of reminds me, and I think we had a conversation on the podcast years ago about this, about like honey jars versus sweetening jars, because sweetening jars are very much, I'm gonna say close practice, right? They're from traditions like this that we're reading about. Honey jars, spells that use both jars and honey, are not necessarily closed. And I think Florida water might be sitting in a similar position there, where like, do if you would like to make your own cleansing water or floral water or something like that, but are you making Florida water? Maybe not. And maybe like that's something I have to unpack and look more into as well, because I own a ton of Florida waters made by a witch in California who is Iranian and I love her, but like, is it actually Florida water or is it a floral cleansing water?
I mean, it's very weird for me when I walk into a witch shop and they have botanica items. Because I'm like, oh, okay. For me, you should think, well, aren't you happy, Scorpio? You can do one-stop shopping. And part of me is like, I don't know why you have this here. I'm still going to go to botanica for some things. I am not going to buy it from your shop because I kind of feel weird about buying in your shop. Maybe at some point we'll get to the point where it doesn't matter, but right now it just feels weird to me. So I don't know. And then again, how do we not know that Florida water is used by Iranians for the similar purpose, but kind of different? And maybe they add something to it, and that's cool too. Like, I
Right.
don't know.
But then is it Florida water or is it, does it have a cool Iranian name that we should be using out of respect?
Yeah,
It's,
these are all good questions.
there's no answer here yet, but it's something that we have to think about as we, as witches, participate in a more global witchcraft community.
Right. And especially if you're in the US where lines get blurred a lot, because if you're in a neighborhood and there's a botanica there, but not a witch shop, can you just go into the botanica? Part of me says yes. Part of me says, what are you doing in a botanica? Like, I don't know. I don't know. But these are, I think, bigger conversations that we need to have at some point. Because it'd be nice if everybody just went everywhere and we can use each other's things, but there's a whole history as to why things are closed, and there's a whole history of people taking things they shouldn't that makes other people, wary. So, yeah, we'll have the conversation.
And I think that actually this conversation is one of the reasons I want people to read this book. Because reading about the Erzulis and then going into chapter 8, Ido Wedo, reading about Haitian voodoo especially can be really important because it is so demonized in sort of pop culture. To be able to sit here and say, like, okay, the Erzulis are like, to many people, considered entities that are specifically focused on the empowerment and resistance of women, that's a powerful thing. That's a powerful tool. You don't refer to Ido Wedo as the shining crown of the rainbow and then go on to say, you know, she's a demon that's possessing souls. So I think that having this context of being able to see the actual practice, and especially for, since a lot of witches are women, to look at the empowerment as well, helps you to sort of step back from that conditioning that we've gotten, that propaganda that we all get. And say, well, what is actually Haitian voodoo? What are these actual religions that the mainstream media has told me are bad or demonic or whatever. Because the more we read this book, the more that you can see how beautiful and vibrant and truly empowering they can be.
Yeah. You know, you go to New Orleans, just to go to New Orleans voodoo, you know, you see all these shops for tourists, right? You see all these shops where people just go and they just want to buy something. And they're like, oh, I was in a voodoo shop type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the, you know, the temple, the voodoo temple there. And people could learn more, but they don't. And then when they do something like American Horror Story, of which, you know, how I feel about American Horror Story changes constantly. But you do this thing with the Salem witches that was kind of cool, right? The Salem witches that didn't die, the real witches survived. Mm-hmm. And now they opened up this school. Ooh, how cool. But then you take someone like Marie Laveau and you make her a baby killer.
Yeah.
And you take people from the religion and you make them demons. You just change what you will. And there was no talk about it. There was no, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I've never heard an apology or somebody saying, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. Why? You know, it's like there were good witches and bad witches, but when it came to voodoo, they were all bad.
Yeah.
Right. When Queenie was working for Marie Laveau, she was going to the bad side. And it's like, what? You know, so still today, even though that's, I'm trying to think, that's got to be at least 10 years old by this point, but that's wow. Not that old. Yeah. That show came out. And then of course they came back with the witches. And I think Marie Laveau, I think the voodoo, again, no, the person who took over, the new voodoo queen, was also bad.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to be stopped. And it's like, okay, this is.
But then you read this and it's, you know, Irzuli, the storm of love, Ida Wedo, yeah. The rainbow after the storm.
Yeah.
Right. We're talking about when we get to chapter 9, La Sirene.
Well, she helps us to realize how to navigate difficulties of life. And isn't that a wonderful and positive thing to do? Right. Rules over sacred sounds and the domain is the sea. And that makes sense when you think about sirens, mm-hmm. right? You think about Greek mythology. Absolutely. How this all kind of comes together. It's kind of really cool.
She's seen as an initiator who brings individuals into the religion. And yes, there are stories about her that are scary. She sweeps people under the water. Sometimes they don't return. But so many deities, so much divine energy is that balance of I could heal you or I could harm you. I could guide you or I could make you lose your way. And we right. don't talk about... I don't see people talking about the Greek gods like that. I don't see people talking about, you know, the Roman pantheon or the Norse pantheon, sometimes the Norse pantheon a little bit, but like mostly you see the focus on the more positive aspects and you don't see the focus on the positive aspects. The idea of being an initiator, of being a guider, of being like a North Star, right? If you're going to think about navigating the waters, that is so incredibly powerful. That's the kind of entity, that's the kind of deity that you want to have in your life supporting you. So the idea that we're going to just be like, oh, well, you know, she can make you get lost. Okay. So can Hermes.
Yeah.
So we've talked a really long time already, and we don't want this episode to be too long. So Scorpio, is there one last thing you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Well, I think we really have to talk about not the last chapter, but one of the last chapters, chapter 11 with Marie Laveau, just because I'm a fan. I don't know how else to say it.
Fair.
But I'm a fan of hers. So what I like is how she starts out. She says a voodoo queen is a woman who holds the power and majesty of the religion of voodoo. Who holds the power and majesty.
Yeah.
Right? Such a beautiful way to put it. Such a empowering way to put it. So then, of course, she talks a little bit about Marie Laveau, how she got married, guy disappeared. Then she had a partner she had 7 kids with. And one of her kids was named Marie. And that kind of started the whole Marie never aged. Marie never died because, of course, her daughter, Marie, took over a lot. And of course, you know, Hollywood has had their own take mm-hmm. on Marie Laveau, which for me personally was truly disappointing with American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And I think it's just another example of how because it's so easy to malign these religions because Hollywood has done it for so long, nobody even thinks, you know what, we shouldn't do this. We should try to get some things right. You know, Laveau, one thing that I love about her is that, as she says it here, she stood for justice for the oppressed and was known to always be charitable. And, you know, what kills me is when we're talking about these religions and how people talk about them, why don't we focus on stuff like this?
Yeah. The
good work that people, not just Marie Laveau, but a bunch of other people have done.
She does talk about in this chapter as well, other voodoo queens, and mentions them sort of throughout the narrative of Laveau. And I think that that was also really nice to just sort of say, like, okay, yeah, we all know Marie Laveau, right? Yeah, everybody does. If you're a witch, if you've heard of New Orleans, if you've heard of voodoo, you've heard of Marie Laveau. But she's not the only voodoo queen. And I think that that helps to take away from that, that sort of Hollywoodification, right? To say, like, okay, well, there's also Queen Nanny. There's also these other women who held the power and majesty of voodoo. It wasn't just this, this fictionalized woman who we have kind of put up on a pedestal to be someone she wasn't, right? Not only am I going to tell you the truth about her, but I'm going to tell you the truth about the other women who did similar things to her, who held the same space as her, who cared for the same, sort of tended the same fire that she did.
Yeah. And I think that is what I love about this book.
Yeah.
Is that whether you know these queens or know these deities because of your own practice or because of what you've heard other people say, putting them all together like this for me is new.
Yeah.
You know, would I ever think that Oshun would be in the same book as Santa Muerte?
No, no. Probably not.
Right? That's not how I see them, but that's also because of my culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when I'm talking about, or when I think about my culture and I think about my Cuban family, yeah, the Orishas are part of that. I understand that they come from Africa. It's not like I think they come from Cuba necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is, I see them in one particular sphere, and then to see them with other deities was beautiful for me. It's almost like I got to see their family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I only know them this way, but now you're like, oh, like when you have cousins and they're like, well, this is my family over there. And you're like, oh, wow. Like you're not related to them, but oh, that's your family too. That's cool. That's what this was like for me. So what can I say? If you've worked with any of the deities that we've talked about, and you want to know more, this is a great book. If you have no idea, if you want to just open yourself up to others, this is a great book. And again, she does make it accessible. Just because they come from closed practices doesn't mean that if you really feel that you want to work with somebody, that you can start, like she said, do an altar to them, start working with them, then find the right people. So I'm going to say that, this is a book I'm not getting rid of. This is mine, and I am never giving it up, and I love it. So
I will be putting mine in the lending library, but only because I do think that people should read this. And I think, especially like I mentioned at the top of the episode, I had a little bit of difficulty sort of getting into it just because it's not for me, but it is for everyone, right? And I think once, if you're coming at it from a white lady perspective, you need to read this because you have probably internalized some stuff about these goddesses, about these voodoo queens, about the religions and the narratives that are told in this book. And it really just, it clears the air. It makes clear in a way that we don't get to see in sort of the mainstream why these religions are so important and why these goddesses and entities and spirits and et cetera are so important. I'm never going to do any of the like spells or workings or anything that's in the book, but it was important to read and it was a good read. Like the stories are captivating in the same way that stories about my gods or other gods are. Let us know if you liked it, if you read along with us, if there's anything in particular you wanted us to talk more about or less about. We try to keep these episodes to a reasonable length because otherwise we'd be sitting here for 4 hours talking about books. But I think there's a lot in here. There's a lot in all of our books. So of course, reach out to us if you have any opinions at whichspaceco@gmail.com or on Instagram, whichspaceco. This episode drops on the 10th, which means you guys have already seen on Which Space Presents our Ostara episode for Moon, Serpent, and Bone. If you haven't listened to that, hop over there and listen to it. We talked a little bit about what spring means to us. We had a really fun interview with Amy. Those episodes, I think, have just morphed into something so beautiful and interesting that really like adds value. So if you haven't listened to it, take a listen. Thank you so much to you guys, our amazing audience, for giving us the opportunity to do podcasts like this, to talk about deeper and more interesting stuff, and to cover all of the different cultures that we want to be exposed to. Thank you, of course, to Kano and Moore for our amazing intro and outro music. And remember, if you're following the moons,
you're following us. Thank you.